Where are you from? Where is this? Where
That was Northern California.
So you're from Northern California.
Yeah, and I also grew up in Colorado, up in the hills for like 8 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What years were you in Colorado?
Had to be 80, had to be like 82 to, let's see. Moved to San Francisco right when they had the earthquake, so 89.
Yeah.
So
How old were
80,
you?
I was, like 3 to 10 or something.
3 to 10.
Yeah.
Okay, so you were in California before that, 3 to 10, and then when you were 10, you moved back to California.
Yeah.
To where in California?
Half Moon Bay.
Half Moon Bay.
It's like south of San Francisco.
Yeah, it was close to there.
Yeah. Anyway. So, yeah. I mean, I do think part of it is like, but I see, I was here before there was, before I think I was here before the big trad jazz resurgence. Like I got here
You might have been.
6 years ago in
Yeah,
2004.
that was before. If it was before the storm,
Yeah, it
definitely.
was before it was like 9 months before the storm.
Yeah.
And I remember walking in to see the Jazz
That
Vipers,
was the only thing
and that made a big impression on me.
going.
Like it was, there's something like really special about what they were doing, or just like hearing that music live. That, so that made a big impression on me even before there was like a big scene for it here. And I do think part of that was like, whoa, this music that, having gone to Oberlin, like I tried to take some jazz classes while I was there, and I was like scared shitless. Like the attitude, I mean, I was a shy little kid, but also the attitude was there, like, oh, you want to play this music? Oh, really? You think you can? I don't think so. You're like, prove it. It was a very like cutting attitude. It's very like tough love attitude. Like I would see guys come out of their lessons crying, like tough du jazz dudes come out of their lessons crying because that's the way to teach that music. So
Yeah,
I totally
that's what
got
they
scared
believed.
off. Yeah, it's a weird thing. I was totally
Yeah.
scared off after a semester, being like, okay, maybe I don't want to play that music. Never mind, I'm not good enough. Like it's clear I'm not good enough. Instead of them being like, oh, you want to play this music? You're interested in it? All right, like, come on, come along.
It's funny that that's the way, it's it strikes me as odd that that's the way jazz educators have sort of inculcated that attitude in the
Yeah.
academy. But anybody I've met that has really just been out playing, who are of equivalent value, don't act anything like
Just
that,
seems
and
backwards, yeah.
they don't teach anything like that. It's like they're preserving an idea that had momentary traction in
Right.
1936 or something, and
I mean, it
it's
has to
kind of
be that
funny.
whole like cutting, like the cutting session kind of vibe, right? Is
Yeah,
going
except
on?
that, I mean, I don't know about you, but my reading, my perception of that in jazz is it was also, there was definitely some cutting going on, but it was for entertainment value.
Yeah,
It
that's
was
true.
entertaining.
Yeah.
People understood the language, were familiar enough at the time to understand the language,
Yeah.
and there was entertainment. In other words, we buy those records with two guys that are incredible, Tenor Madness or something,
Yeah.
because they knew that they were going to create an exciting time.
Right.
Definitely, there was going to be people standing around going, "This guy's better, that guy's better." But it's excitement. It's like
Yeah.
sports, same thing
Yeah.
we do. So, but they wouldn't do it if it wasn't exciting.
Right. Which it's not
I,
in academia when the professor, when the teacher is like, oh, you think you can play? You're a piece of shit. Get lost.
yeah.
Like, you don't have it. It's like sort of like, okay. You're a teacher.
If you're in school, you don't have to create appeal.
Yeah.
And
Makes
very, very
sense.
few people have natural appeal without actually doing something. And I mean,
Right.
it's funny. I think it.
So I don't, I mean, I think part of that, like seeing, like seeing the Vipers play after coming from an institution where I was totally scared off by jazz. I was like, whoa, this is awesome. Like, this is really cool.
And then what kept you off of the other music? What was your take on the other, since that was the only group that was doing that, what about the other music that was going on?
I was here like 9 months before the storm. I didn't hear, I mean, the things I remember hearing were, I lived way uptown and I would like come downtown like twice a week. And I went to the Maple Leaf a couple times and I liked the music, but I didn't really like the scene.
Tell me about the scene. What was it in the scene that you didn't like?
I mean, I was just a shy, I'm still in, but I then especially I was like a pretty shy lady, pretty shy girl, and it was like total southern frat boy kind of scene, like the uptown scene was. And I was just like, oh, I just want to sit and listen to music. Everyone's drunk and smoking and bumping into me and a bunch of white hats hitting on me, uh-huh. You know?
Right.
I think that was part of it, is like learning how to work in the environment in which you land. Because it's not, it's not my natural environment.
So you stayed here because of the interest in traditional jazz?
Yeah, I guess kind of. I mean, I did leave. I did go to grad school for 4 weeks for composition at UT Austin.
Really?
Yeah.
You went only for a month?
I went for a month. I applied to CalArts and I applied to UT Austin. And that was my, I mean, the reason I came down to New Orleans was to work on my composition portfolio. Because I went to France for a year to study this experimental theater thing. And then I came back and I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. And I had one friend down here, so I moved down here and I was like, I guess I'll, I really, when I went to France, it was like because I really was interested in this interdisciplinary, like collaborative work. And so I went to this theater school that I thought was going to totally like push me forward. It's a school that like Julie Taymor went to and Bill Irwin and Jeffrey Rush, like a bunch of like writers I really respect and kind of theater artists I really respect. And it kind of ended up doing the opposite. Like, I think there was something about the founder, it was called the Jacques Lecoq School, and the founder of the school had died like 3 years previous to when we went there, and the whole school was kind of he was basically the school, so they were trying to like recreate him basically.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a lot of internal fights about like how should we teach this technique, and so it was just like pretty confused.
And at that point schooling. You didn't want to go anywhere else other than that?
I did. At that point, I was really set on like, this is what I had, my last year of school, I wrote a big play that was about 2.5 hours long, and it had video and music, and you know, and I was, and it almost kind of almost killed me. It was one of those things of like, I slept 3 hours or 4 hours a night for like 4 months straight because I was
mm-hmm.
writing all the time. But it was one of those things when, you know, we like, I got it performed, like produced it and performed it. And at the end, I was like, this is what I want to do with my life. This is what I want to do. I want to write these weird things. I want to write music for it, and I want to put on these performances that bring, like, music and sound and language all together.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, but it's clearly not sustainable to do it the way that I'm doing it.
Because
mm-hmm. the way that I kind of work traditionally has been, like, fester and then vomit. Like, fester and vomit, creatively speaking.
What happens when you're festering?
It's just like, you know, you just get kind of like manic, and there's lots of little things going on in your brain that are not necessarily attached, but you know that you have some potential to make something that's maybe good,
uh-huh.
but it's not like attached, and you're not necessarily, you know, it's like there's no method to it. It's just like
mm-hmm.
you have these ideas, and then suddenly you're like, shit, I have a deadline, and then you kind of puke something out.
Do you still get deadlines to do those kind of ideas?
Only, I mean, now it's like me giving myself a, like booking a show, you know?
So you still book shows where you're doing this?
Sometimes, yeah. Like doing those open ears once in a while.
Uh-huh. And what goes on, but I want to come to that. How did you meet people in the music community in New Orleans? It seems like, I mean, you know, my recollection of becoming familiar with you here was you were quickly around some, playing with some sort of, you know, very established New Orleans people like Tom mm-hmm. McDermott and things like that, and showing up on recordings. And,
yeah.
And that seems a very quick transformation here. I understand New Orleans does take some people in that way. I was too, you know,
yeah.
where it was surprising how quick.
Yeah.
But was there a force that? Was there a way that happened, or did you just find that it happened?
I think I went to the spot a cat and like sat in with the vipers.
Okay.
That was not, I'm pretty positive I was not good. And I think I sat in with Panorama.
Okay.
A couple times. And then, really, I think Panorama really was like my first gig. And it was not the jazz band, it was the Mardi Gras after the storm. Ben Schenk wrote to me, and I'd only met him a couple times.
Oh, really?
He wrote to me when I was living in Baltimore and was like, hey, we're trying to put together a brass band for Mardi Gras, for the
mm-hmm.
first Mardi Gras back from after Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to play this music with us?
Oh.
I can't remember, but I think that was kind of like the first like gig. Well, actually, that's not true. That could be true. I can't remember. Sydney Snow gave me my first gig here in town on soprano. But Panorama was the first like thing I remember like playing with a band, and then from that I kind of sat in, and then I played in that band Va Va Voom for a while, which was kind of what I think where I developed ability to play. And I'm pretty certain I was not good when I was first in that band either. And then, but they play like twice a week with Spotted Cat, and so from just playing a lot, then I
started. Did you pick, I mean, it seemed, I've seen you out playing accordion, soprano saxophone, alto saxophone, and clarinet. And how did you elect to play these instruments? How did you choose those ones?
I mean, saxophone was just like the natural step from, I played a little bit in college after, you know, I played flute and oboe in high school, and then I kind of switched to saxophone when I thought I was interested in being a jazz musician for a minute. So that was like kind of natural to me. Accordion, I had actually been, when I first moved down to New Orleans, I was like, yeah, I want to move to New Orleans, I want to be an accordion player.
Uh-huh.
That was actually what I really was interested in doing, and then I just kept getting hired on the saxophone.
How did you come up with an attraction to the accordion at all?
I don't know. I think a friend of mine in college, the last year in college, a friend of mine who was actually a really good composer, Vincent Caliano, he started writing music, and we had this woman, Pauline Oliveros, who was teaching at Oberlin. She does all these like deep listening drone music, you know, she's like an older composer. And it I think a part of it was just like the independence of the accordion makes it appealing. Like, it's, you can carry it places, but also you don't need a band to back you up, unlike a saxophone or flute or whatever. And if you can figure out how the fuck it works, then it can be a really versatile instrument, mm-hmm. you know?
I mean, I see you, there's another mode of what you do that I've seen you in, which is, you know, like things like the orange overalls and the gas mask and the accordion.
Yeah.
What's that about?
I mean, that feels honestly more like me than most things,
uh-huh.
than most things I do in town. Like, uh-huh. The tragic stuff I really like, and I feel like I'm starting to come to find myself in that stuff, and like I said, kind of not care about, you know, correctness in that, but the like gas masks and those are all like original songs that I've been doing. That feels more like going back to. I am interested in like kind of like the theatricalness and not the disingenuousness of performing under a character or like play acting, but I do think there is something interesting in the theatricalness of performance. You know. Like, if you're going to be in front of people, then
it's okay.
Have something to say.
They didn't used to be separate in culture. It's
yeah.
pretty recent. It's okay.
Yeah.
Now, when you're playing for... When you're playing traditional jazz, it seems now that what we've been talking about is your... acceptance or non-acceptance by peers, by other musicians.
Yeah.
But what's your deal with what's going on with audiences and is there some way, something that you're trying to get across to them, or do you not care, or are you?
I do. No, I do care. I actually do care. Uh-huh. I guess if we're going to talk about like that scene, there's a scene of dancers certainly that has moved to town that kind of has swallowed up that music and has become like the scene that to me feels like surrounds that music.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think they're about? Why are the, what's going on there?
I mean, I think it's a very similar thing to the music. You know, it's like a way to be social. It's like a scene. Like everyone wants to be part of the cool club, kind of. You know.
I guess I don't know, because it seems to me if you're a dancer, I mean, you could also be, you know, the Beyonce thing. So
sure, yeah.
So I'm trying to spot like why, what the differentiation is, what they're seeing, what
well,
they want.
Young
what they're...
white kids,
yeah.
partly, you know.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we're, you know, I'm a young white.
I mean,
kid.
But 10 years ago, they that those people were into Eminem, so you know,
yeah.
Kid Rock. So the question is,
what is the retro?
Yeah,
the retro appeal.
I'm asking because you're around it. It's interesting.
Yeah.
I think people are interested, and you know, I'm interested. I don't think it, I don't get the feeling that the question's getting asked. I think people just make presumptions. So
I mean, I don't, you know, that's a big question. I have a lot of, I think there's like part of it that's like, the appeal of the retroness is like, it's safe. In a way, it's like safe of like, this is, you know exactly how you're supposed to look. You know exactly, you know, how to dress. You know, like, the dynamics between girls and boys are pretty clear.
Oh, really?
Are already set out for you. A little bit, I think. In terms of like, going retro as far as...
Oh, about the clothing.
Clothing, and but then also like, attitudes that follow, or like,
how would they know? I mean,
that's what it seems. I mean, these are like broad strokes.
Okay. No, that's okay. You're more. I mean, it's less broad than I would make. I mean, because
yeah.
I don't know. I'm you're around everybody. Explain that to me. That what the sexual dynamic is that way.
I mean, I think there's something appealing. I don't know. You know, like, again, this is could be like a very subconscious thing, and
uh-huh.
and why it's appealing to people uh-huh. my age to like. Go retro and be totally vintage, but I do think part of it is like, yeah, the aesthetic is nice. It's a nice aesthetic, but then also like it comes with like a very set like, yeah, like girls are pretty, girls wear dresses, girls wear high heels. It's like girls are there for the boys to look at,
uh-huh.
and the boys are there to like be manly, kind of, in a way. That's, you know.
So that's.
I do think there is some appeal in that of like, we're going back to when we know who is who, and like when we know gender wise, like how to act around each other.
It's very ironic because, of course, you know, like we were. I wrote this piece, from your record. I guess I don't really write reviews right now.
Yeah.
I just write. I just things make me think about other things. But
yeah.
The question is whether. That again sounds like very conservative behavior when the music that you're playing came from various kinds of liberation movements that ended
sure.
up with people, you know, everything from, plenty of either openly gay jazz musicians or
right.
people with different sexual behaviors or women breaking out of all these kinds of
right.
roles, everyone from Bessie Smith down to
I don't think it's like a complete immersion. Like, I don't think it's a queer unfriendly crowd at all, or a,
uh-huh.
you know, I don't think it's like totally misogynistic crowd either.
Uh-huh.
I just do see it as being like, it is very clear. Like, I've been told several times of like, Aurora, you need to start dressing up in a dress if you want to have appeal with these, with the scene. You need to like think about dressing up more and singing into a vintage microphone. You need to think of, you know, like, I have been told that sometimes by my peers, or sometimes by like, yeah, mostly by my
peers.
How
does that make you feel?
It kind of makes me feel shitty.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's just not who, but it makes it, you know, it's a little, I don't know, it's kind of a double-edged sword, because like, I do like dressing up sometimes when I want to, but then those kind of comments make me want to just like go to gigs in like a football uniform or
mm-hmm.
something, you know, just
yeah.
because I don't like that. I have a bit of that, like, I don't like that the music is about an image. I'd prefer if the music were about the music, but unfortunately it is true, the music is about an image, and that's, it's always been about an image, you know, there's no avoiding it, so there's just a way of working with,
you know, are you
it.
Sure it's not are you sure it's about image? I mean, all these people talk about is energy, and even I'm just asking because the quotes that you put on, for instance, the Sidney Bechet record,
yeah.
which I was pulling out, were about music mm. and about energy, and about we're about a kind of motion rather than a kind of stasis.
Right. No, that is true. I mean, I think ultimately, listening to the music is about the music. Like, ultimately, listening to it is about the music. But I do think, in terms of a broader scene
mm-hmm.
and appeal, and especially with live music, like, part of that is about the presentation and the image, you know? Because
so,
a live music is it an experience? Like going to an experience live music is not just about the music. It is about like your atmosphere and
when you go to open ears.
Yeah.
This strikes me as very different. Actually, I have a piece I was writing about the experience the other night. I was at the open ear show, Marcello Benetti's show.
Yeah.
And I was taking a friend up. We were at Marcello's, which was sounded really amazing, and then at the Spotted Cat.
Yeah.
And at Marcello's show, no one dressed any particular way, neither the musicians nor.
Right.
I couldn't really spot that there was any particular
demographic.
Demographic, certainly in the clothes, it was really unclear. I mean, there was just, you know, people dressed in, I mean, there were women dressed in contemporary business outfits or wearing, you know, weird New Orleans costume, and the men
right.
were wearing either jeans and a t-shirt or a suit. Or you couldn't, there's no, absolutely no rhyme or reason to it. Whereas
right.
if you go over to the Spotted Cat, everybody is, it's a very uniform crowd, especially those at the front that are paying attention.
Yeah.
It's clear that they're in uniform.
Yeah.
And the musicians are, even if it's just a tip of a hat, like, you know, as Mike Fulton was, I'm out, he plus. I don't think Mike cares, but he's,
right.
you know, he's basically just got the hat. So there
right.
you go, you get the hat.
Yeah.
you know
yeah.
what I mean? But that's interesting because I you're saying this about image, but then you go over to, I know you play at Open Ears or something, and then is that part of it there, or is that what's going on?
I mean, I feel that less. I feel that less in the open ears.
Uh-huh.
See, I mean, I feel that uniformity less. I think that kind of vintage scene that surrounds the trad jazz scene here right now is very strong, and it is a strong community. And as with like any community, there comes trends and popularity and things like that, you know, which are both a boon and also a frustrating part of it, you know.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's nice to have community surrounding something, for sure.
Uh-huh. So you feel like a drive towards feeling like a sense of community or like you're part of something.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so if you're doing something as individual as the gas mask and the... this is a long time ago, I realized, Feast, if I'm saying something
yeah.
bad, because that's one of the things I've seen here.
No, I've been doing
that. Contrasting it, so the thing about that is... is there a community involved in that?
There is. It's taken me a long time to like see and really value that more, I think, than I value the jazz community for me. Just because I am sort of, that's for me, it's over the last like 6 months, I'm like, Neeland, you got to focus on like your people that you feel more connected to, which I do think are people I see as slightly more accepting or creative people or just,
uh-huh.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not trying to put down anyone's scene. It's just...
Well, it's a hard thing, you know.
There's like... There does feel it's more open,
uh-huh.
I guess.
Uh-huh. I mean, I don't know. You know, I mean, it's fine to talk this way. I don't feel like behavioral differentiation is describing any disunity, you know.
Right.
It's like for some people they're like, oh, you shouldn't describe any differences between anything, and then you think, well, then there's very little point of living.
Yeah.
So there's no difference between being alive and being dead. There's no difference between, you know, it's
right.
you end up
yeah.
at a dead end.
Boring.
And you're boring. So